I'm your Venus.
I'm your fire.
Your desire.
I don't know the rest of the song.
Okay, but that's Roman. And most of what we're doing today is Greek.
Yes.
But hey, Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day from your friends at Trashy Divorces, who obviously did not want this most romantic of holidays to go unnoticed by us, the podcast about relationships gone wrong. So,
who believe that if you believe in Valentine's Day, every day is Valentine's Day. So we hope today you're just doing what you normally do. But if you have wine and chocolates, it's fine too.
Mostly we hope you listen to our podcast. We have a guest coming up.
We do, for the special bonus.
But fortunately her name is also Alicia, so it's really like we don't have a guest, except she's way smarter than we are. So
she's way smarter. She is a PhD student in mythology.
She goes to Hogwarts,
and she came to tell us all about
trashy divorces in myth and legend.
Mythology stuff.
Primarily Greek, it turns out.
So,
and there are reasons for that, which she tells us. It's a really fascinating interview, like front to back. So,
I'm Your Aphrodite is not as catchy of a title.
No.
But it still hasn't gone to press yet. So, who knows what it'll be called. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. Please enjoy our little trashy divorces in myth and legend.
Mythology style.
Episode.
Follow your bliss. And it's our mythology trashy divorces. I'm so excited. Alicia, thank you for coming today.
I'm so excited too.
The other Alicia, my other favorite Alicia in the whole world. Alicia, you are a PhD student in mythology.
Yes, I'm training to be a mythologist.
That's really a field? That's something you can do for a living?
That is really a field.
Cool.
And your face lights up when you talk about it. This is legitimately your favorite thing.
Yes.
And we are so excited to have you here today. We are going to take a little break for... Oh, happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Happy Valentine's Day. Taking a little detour to the land of myth and legendary divorces, I guess.
People have been doing wrong with love since the beginning of time, and we're here to tell you about it. Welcome, Alicia. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. So you asked me about this a couple of quarters ago while I was doing some research, and so I brought some of my books because I kept running into these lovely divorces while
see, I planted reading. The seed.
You planted the seed. The interesting thing is that I tried to look cross-culturally, and in reality, mythology serves a lot of purposes, and one of the purposes that it serves is kind of drawing the lines of right and wrong for the society. So a lot of mythology is normative, and it's telling people, no, you don't want to get a divorce. So often, divorces aren't mentioned in a lot of different cultures. Like, I tried to find something in Hindu, I tried to find some stuff in Asia, and they're just literally not there. And I thought that that was really interesting because it's culturally reflective.
Sure.
It's also interesting the fact that Norse mythology has a divorce that is just like, yep, not trashy at all. It's there's a goddess, Skadi, lives, it's S-K-A-D-I, lives up in the mountains in the cold, and she's the goddess of skiing. I kid you not, the goddess of skiing.
I mean, there's a Norse goddess of skiing?
I mean, yes. That makes sense.
Okay.
And she marries Njord.
Oh, well, sure.
And Njord is a god of fishing who is from the southerly regions where
it's never,
actually...
they're star-crossed lovers. It's never going to work.
It's never going to work. They could never decide where to live. They couldn't decide whether to live in the mountains
like
or on the seashore.
New York or L.A. I mean, this week, confront this in other stories.
And so they divorced because they could never decide on a living place. And it was just totally cool. Like the whole...
I'm going to stay down here and fish. You stay up there and ski.
Like, and the culture's kind of like, yeah, this makes sense. Like, there's no...
There's an amicable... divorce.
And Norse culture, women were able to amicably divorce the men.
Really?
Yeah. They were, especially if they weren't provided for properly or if they were abused, they could just take off. And so...
Well, the Norse are doing it right.
The Norse did it right, which was really interesting, which is why I thought it was really cool to find a non-trashy divorce in their mythology. Now, the rest of my myths
are bad.
The rest of my myths come from ancient Greece. Who are notoriously trashy. But also, the thing about ancient Greece is that the myths, one of the functions of the myths, especially when it was the oral tradition, was entertainment. Mm-hmm. They're deliberately made into soap operas.
Welcome to Trashy Divorces. arrived at the right podcast. Do you think that Greek myths are trashier than Roman? I mean, I know there's a lot of crossover.
So Roman mythology before the Greek synthesis is primarily ritual based.
Okay.
And had no stories.
Ah.
The reason why there's crossover is because the Romans went, oh, look, they have soap operas.
I was going to.
They did something cooler.
Right. Yeah. So Greek mythology is unique in that. In that way, like it's
unique in the fact, first of all, that we have all of it written down.
Oh, okay, that's a fair point.
And we have the tragedies that retell it. We have retellings upon retellings mm-hmm. since the 5th century BC. Mm-hmm. It's also unique in the fact that the culture that is reflected by these stories still echoes in our culture, and so it's stuff we relate to and can see and can hear. And could go, oh, yeah, I know a dude that. Yeah,
exactly. I know that guy.
And so because it's so familiar, it doesn't feel so outlandish. Soap operas are still fun for us.
Sure.
Myths are still a blast to read. And so the stuff that makes them foreign to us, like there's an entire section in Europe and mythology where one woman tricks another woman into feeding the god her ears.
What?
And yeah, and it grosses him out, and he dumps one of his two girls, and the whole reason is because she fed him her ears, and that is so bizarre to us culturally that we can't feel it in our hearts and understand it and like go, oh yeah, that's a trashy divorce. Like, that's just weird.
Yeah, now I'm gonna keep my ears on my head.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, to your point though, Egyptian mythology has a lot of trashy stuff to it. Not that far outside of, you know, Greek mythology mm-hmm. off the top of my head. But yeah, it doesn't have that same cultural resonance to make it feel, and I guess like the Mayans may have had a super trashy mythology, but it's not written down.
Well, the Mayans is written down. Okay. It's as written down as the Egyptians. They dated everything. The really cool thing about Mayan stuff is that we also have all of the stuff written down in the places. Like they have like, and on this day, this happened kind of things.
Right.
But they didn't have any divorces. I looked.
Oh, really? Ah. Okay. I guess I thought we didn't have a great way to translate Mayan writing. Am I wrong on
they've,
that?
They've made a
breakthrough. There's okay. a really good PBS special
oh, really?
I can turn you on to. You've awesome. Seen okay.
About
two, right?
a year ago. About oh. a year ago, they really yeah. made some really big breakthroughs.
Okay, huge. That's cool. So it's not like this thing's been in play for years and no. I just didn't know. No. Okay, so all right. I feel a little better.
Ta-da.
I was like,
breaking
damn,
information.
I just
yes.
totally bungled facts, but okay.
Yeah, no, it's all.
So it's recent, okay.
Relatively recent.
Cool,
yeah.
Okay.
So today we're going back to ancient Greece.
Ancient Greece.
Talk to us.
Ancient Greece. Well, so we got to start at the top.
And okay.
You got to start with Zeus.
I think the picture I stole it from your page that we're going to use for this is the Zeus, literally every other woman turning around. I think that's our cover photo for this episode.
Okay. I think it should be.
Oh, Zeus.
So here's the thing. I told you I've written a novel that I'm working on the revisions of. It's mm-hmm. a retelling. And part of that novel is really, it's redeeming Hera, because Hera gets a really bad rap.
She does.
She is essentially, so like, I don't know if you guys remember 80s soap operas. She's like the Erica Kane character mm-hmm. that everybody automatically recognizes. Like I say Erica Kane, you have a picture in your head. You've got
Absolutely.
Her dark hair. You've got, you know who she is.
Right.
And so when they were retelling these stories, Hera was that character of like the automatic, everybody was going to make her the bad guy. And because it worked in the story, it added to the drama. Now, the thing is that...
Do you not think just Hera was tired of his shit?
She was the goddess of marriage.
I mean, come on.
She was the goddess of marriage. And every time he cheated on her, he was literally like messing with the thing that she
that
was the
she
ruler
does.
Of.
This is my superpower, for God's sake.
Exactly.
God, I'm mad.
You know, I'm the goddess of marriage, and I can't keep his dick in his pants.
It is. Poor Hera.
And yeah, poor Hera. And also, like, he tricked her into marrying him. And, like, it was, he kind of, like, horned in on her power to trick her into marrying him to begin with. And she's
how
like,
did he, I don't know. Okay.
He turned into a little bird, and she felt bad for the little bird, and she picked up the little bird, and then he raped her.
Wow.
What?
Yeah.
Wait,
he's very rapey.
I have a lot of questions. Hold on. Did he manifest back into God form?
Yes.
Okay.
Sometimes he doesn't. Lita and the swan, he was still in swan form when he raped her.
Dude, Zeus is trash.
It's yeah, there's a, yeah.
That, we're not even done with the Zeus story, and I think he's five trash cans.
No, I did not write down all 12 of the women that he has sex with outside of his marriage.
12?
12.
Hair is mad.
Some of them were before their marriage, but yes, Hera is mad.
Sure.
Which is also why she goes after the demigods that he produces in all of these meetings. Now,
makes sense.
From a cultural standpoint, often it was the Indo-European people coming into whatever area and going, you're local goddess and you're local hero. So here's how this works. Our god is married to your local goddess, and he's the one that was the father of this local hero.
Right.
Bam, you are now part of our pantheon.
Wow.
It was part of the religious,
sure,
like, cohesion,
mm-hmm,
that was created out of these stories. So it was, there was definitely method to the madness, but yeah, Hera gets a bad rap. And I feel bad for her.
I feel bad for her too.
The other thing is, like I was saying, mythology is meant to, it's meant to show you your boundaries. It's meant to say, this is what not to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is how not to go forward. So one of my favorite stories of not a divorce, but an infidelity is Aphrodite.
Oh, Aphrodite.
And she's perfect because it's Valentine's Day.
Sure, no, perfect. Yes.
It's talk timely about her.
So it's interesting to me that in most of the other Middle Eastern and like the ancient Sumerian and a lot of the more ancient cultures, that the goddess of love was also the goddess of war. Freya, Anat, Inanna, mm-hmm, a lot of these other goddesses were goddesses of love and war.
Is it a statement about passion?
I think so.
Okay.
But I think it's also life and death.
Fair.
It's fertility and mm-hmm, and, you know, ashes to ashes kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But also, I think that it is, you don't go to love, you don't go to war for something you're indifferent about.
Right.
However, most of these goddesses are badasses. Like, Freya's a goddess of love, and she's, like, all into pretty jewelry and roses. She's also the queen of the Valkyries.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so
don't mess with me.
Anat, there's a goddess Anat who travels from Sumeria into becoming Set's wife in Egypt, and she's literally got a belt of the hands of the people that she has slain.
Nice.
And she is a goddess of love.
I mean, what?
And so it's,
the patriarchy really did a number on how women got re-represented here in the world.
Well, and ancient Greece is where the patriarchy started.
So we have to go back to Greece to smash it.
Exactly.
Let's do this.
So ancient Greece is the first place where you find the goddess of love
is
separated
only
from
the goddess of love.
War.
Mm-hmm.
And you have two war gods, three, really. You have Athena, who is the mind and is very much about strategy. She's mm-hmm, the chess player. She's the general that's determining, okay, the troops go here, or no, we're going to pull back. She's very strategic, but mm-hmm, she's mostly around defense of her city. She's not necessarily going to go attack something. You have Apollo, which is probably the closest to our current day military with like the, mm-hmm, the drone strikes and just kind of the very swift, very, very scalpel like mm-hmm, precision of
strike
kind
by
of,
night.
Exactly.
Flying. Yeah.
And then you have Ares, who is the passionate berserker kind of god who's like all dude. And he is
the primal part of war.
He's the primal part of mm-hmm, war. And you cannot keep, as hard as Hephaestus tried, he could not keep Aphrodite and Ares out of each other's beds. And so Aphrodite was married to Hephaestus because the Athenians wanted to elevate the love of technology and learning and hard work and creativity and craftsmanship.
Okay. So that's, yeah.
So they were like, well, the Aphrodite gets to marry Hephaestus then because he's our craftsman. He's mm-hmm. the technology guy. And that's all well and good from like a cultural perspective. Because they're like, we want more craftsmen than warriors, kind of feel in Athens, specifically Athens versus Sparta. Mm-hmm. But in reality,
those kids are never going to work together.
And what you have, I really strongly feel what you have thousands of years later is we've prioritized Hephaestus and Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates.
Yeah.
And we have forgotten Ares, and he comes out in shootings and violence and mindless violence that has no way to get out because it's been separated from love.
Huh.
And so that's...
This is why you're a PhD student.
So that's my, like, cultural take on it. However, it's really, really funny because Aphrodite and Ares are just... They just bone. They're just hot for each other, like, all the time. And the sun spies on them. Helios is the all-seeing sun, and the sun goes over and he's like, Hephaestus, they're at it again. And the sun spies on them over and over and over again. He tells Hephaestus when they're going. And so Hephaestus makes this really finely honed net of bronze and makes it so that it's nearly invisible. It's so fine. It's like delicate chains. And he hangs it above the bed. And he waits until Helios goes, yep, they're doing it again. And he traps them. And he traps them under this net. And they're naked and like mid-coitus.
You're going to believe me or your lying eyes? Yeah, you can't get out of this.
And then Hephaestus invites the entire group of gods.
What?
To come in and mock them. And so literally it's the whole like pantheon is strolling around this bed mocking them. And at this point, Hermes is kind of like, I'd trade places with him.
Oh, my God.
This is very interesting. So basically, you have a cuckolded husband who, you know, catches his wife in infidelity and then invites, you know, all the neighbors to come over. Like,
and mock her.
It's an unusual. Yeah, that's an unusual.
But we're not mocking Ares.
No.
Oh, great.
We're just mocking her. Mm-hmm. Thanks, patriarchy.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
What the? No. How did...
Well, because she's the one that was married. He wasn't...
Oh, so... Okay. But still. How long... I mean, how do you get out of that? Does she get vengeance after that on him? That's not the end of the story. What happens?
Well, I mean, Aphrodite and Ares have 4 kids together.
Holy smokes.
The first one is pleasure.
Makes sense.
She doesn't really get vengeance so much as it just doesn't stop her. They start putting lookouts. Watch for Helios.
Yeah.
Let us know when it's sunny.
Hey, maybe try fucking under the moon for once, right?
But then Artemis and Selene, yeah, they're still... There are still eyes at night. Yeah,
there are a bunch of nosy gods and goddesses around this place.
Well, it's soap operas.
Yeah.
It's all entertainment. And they're all completely petty and completely, like, just in their own stuff.
Okay, give me another one. This is so much fun.
Okay, so the one that I ran across when I was studying and you asked me for this is about Tereus. So Tereus is from... I don't remember what city he's from. It's not Athens. He's from somewhere further away, like, you know, across the sea.
Okay. A stranger.
He's a stranger.
He's a dark and handsome stranger.
And he is married to a woman named Procne.
Okay.
Procne is Athenian. And Procne goes off to his house and they're fine.
Sure.
They do okay. They have a kid. You know, he's a toddler. He's wandering around like they're doing okay, except for that she's really far from home.
Aww.
And she says, if you love me at all, please let me visit my sister. I really want to see my sister. I miss her a lot.
Yeah. I need a girls weekend.
I need a girls weekend.
Yeah.
So, but it's not a weekend. It's like a couple of months because he's got to like get in a boat and go all the way to Athens.
Sure.
And so he gets in a boat, goes all the way to Athens, and he asks her dad if he can borrow the sister for Procne to visit. And the dad's like, she's my only joy. And she's the only thing helping me in my old age. And you have to promise to keep her safe and to bring her back.
Okay.
And I love her so. And Terry's like, of course.
I got
just,
you, dude.
This is just my sister-in-law. I just want to make my wife happy.
Sure.
And so then Philomela walks into the room. And you
the
should,
sister.
And you should hear, like, the music change.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh, does it get all bonk, chicka bonk, bonk? Is she sexy?
She's gorgeous.
Oh.
And
Tarius.
And let me see if I can
Tarius is
find.
Doomed.
Tarius is Tarius doomed. Is, he's doomed in more ways than one because
oh,
of
goody.
His actions.
I like it.
Okay, so let me see if I can find when, oh, he's from, okay. Let me see if I can find when Philomela enters. Okay. She was dressed magnificently, but her loveliness was still more splendid, like a naiad's or a dryad's, when we are told they roam the deep woods. Is it if they could be garbed as well, as tastefully, as richly as this girl? That sight was quite enough. The flame of love had taken Tarius, yeah. As if one had set after a fire, ripe grain, dry leaves, or a haystack.
I got a haystack.
All right, so Beyonce walks into the room.
Right.
Yes.
And, yeah. And
yes.
Okay.
And he is aflame. This is actually Alan Mandelbaum's Metamorphosis of Ovid, by the way, that I'm reading. Mandelbaum's an amazing translator. Ovid is a reteller of myths and tells them all slightly aslant, so don't ever take Ovid's word for anything.
Okay.
But it's beautiful, and so I like some of the lyricism of it.
No, I know what flame rose in him.
So he makes all the promises to the dad, takes the sister, gets her on his boat, and
not a good move.
And proceeds
no.
to take her to his hunting cabin.
Not back home.
Not back home.
Oh,
rape
Tarius,
her.
No.
And then when she tells him that she's awful, that he's awful, like she yells at him. She's like, you're a horrible piece of crap person.
Right.
He cuts her tongue out. So she is muted and trapped in a cabin in the middle of nowhere in a strange country. And her brother-in-law is just showing up and randomly raping her when he feels like it.
Dad's going to be pissed.
Dad?
Wife.
So the thing is that he made it so that she couldn't write letters. She couldn't get any sort of messages out. She couldn't do anything. She had no way of calling for help. She had no tongue.
What's wife doing? Is wife worried that you're not back yet?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course. But she has no information. She has no way of finding anything out. So what Philomela does, all women in Greece are supposed to know how to weave, right?
Sure.
This is like a thing you do. So she's weaving. She's bored. She's in a cabin. What the fuck is she supposed to do?
No tongue.
So no tongue.
Can't sing.
So she's weaving. The thing is that they're not from Athens, and they use a different language. She wove a letter to her sister in a border of a very beautiful piece of cloth. And it said, come get me.
Yeah.
I'm stuck here. I don't have a tongue.
He cut out my tongue.
Call 911.
Your husband is a jerk.
And so then she made it just absolutely gorgeous. And he stole it and was like, I'm going to give this to my wife.
What a dick.
Well, he's about to get it just for dessert.
No, I like it. I mean, you have to advance the plot. But
so,
God, patriarchy.
So he takes the cloth and gives it to Procne, who reads it. And
sure.
He's like, are you kidding me? And so this is where the next piece of the story comes forward. So the thing is that I don't know how much you guys know about the rites of Dionysus and the Bacchantes and the Maiads.
I've read the secret history.
So Dionysus is especially beloved of slaves and women. Mm-hmm. Because on the nights of his festival, you could let your hair down, so to speak. It was just a chance of freedom. It was like a big, giant festival of freedom.
Is this where the slaves and masters reverse roles? Was that a Dionysian thing?
Probably.
Okay.
But really, what they're doing is getting really, really drunk and going through the streets and just, like, and occasionally killing people.
I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Essentially. So the women dress like all bedraggled and they mess up their hair and they look kind of crazy. And so what Procne does is she waits until the night of the festival of Dionysus, gets all crazy, looks like a Bacchante so that she blends in with the crowd that is potentially lethal, goes and saves her sister.
Perfect.
Dresses her up like a Bacchante.
Sure.
They come back, blend in with the crowd that is potentially lethal, come home. And then she's like, okay, so what do we do next?
What do we do next?
So the thing, the kind of standard fair way that women would divorce their husbands, because women were pretty much kept in their little compound, except for during the Dionysus rituals and the Thesmophoria and Demeter rituals.
Okay.
So when they're not kept at home, when they are kept at home, their really main purpose is procreation. They're supposed to have kids,
right?
And then like run the household and stuff, but procreation's a big part of it, because there was a lot of gay sex happening, and really husbands only had wives in order to
have
procreate
kids. Yeah,
the main way that women in Greek mythology, real women, like within like normal human realm, not gods, divorce their husbands is by killing their children and feeding them to them.
What?
So Procne killed her son.
Wow.
And
it's dark. This is a dark story.
It's very, very dark. And she fed her husband his own son as a stew.
Dark. I didn't see that coming. I thought the roving bands of drunks were gonna go off him or something. And
no, that's this the Bacchae, and that's a really fun one, where the mother kills her own son. But no, she kills her own son and feeds him to Tereus. And then Tereus goes, "Where's my son? Bring me my boy." And she's like, "He's in your stomach."
Oh.
And then the two women run away, and because they're still dressed as Bacchantes, they run away and disappear into the clouds. And in Ovid's Metamorphosis, they all turn into birds. The two women turn into doves, and Tereus turns into, I think, a vulture.
After he vomits a lot?
Yeah, basically.
I mean, so what is the moral of the story there? It's very, very, very strange.
Don't kidnap your sister-in-law, rape her, and cut out her tongue.
Why do you think there has to be a moral?
That's sort of... Was there some meaning of doves and vulture? Like, is that considered a happy ending, a not happy ending, an ending at all? Like, what...
It's considered an ending.
Okay.
I don't think it was meant to be instructional.
Okay. It's just trashy.
It's trashy divorces.
Trashy AF.
You totally do. You did exactly what I needed you to do. That's fantastic.
Winner. I mean,
Tereus
that is...
gets five trash cans. That's bad. That's
well, but
bad.
So does the wife who murders her kid and feeds the kid. Like, there's nothing not trashy about that story.
But, I mean, if that's custom, you'd think you'd come up with something a little different if you wanted to give the message to your husband, you know, "Dear John, this isn't working out."
I mean, I don't think that was the actual, like, legal process in Greece.
No, it wasn't the legal process, but it comes in the stories a lot.
Right, right.
The main story where that comes up is Medea.
Okay.
With Jason. Now, Medea's a fantastic character. Are you familiar with her?
Talk to us.
Okay. So Medea is a young woman whose father is the guardian of the Golden Fleece.
Ah.
She is a priestess of the goddess Hecate.
Okay.
And a known witch in terms of she knows how to use herbs. She understands magic.
Sure.
She's
kind of a badass.
She's totally a badass.
Okay.
She is Circe's niece.
Oh, Okay.
She is from the same line of great sorceresses.
Perfect.
So she's definitely up there in terms of, yeah, exactly. So she is very young, and Jason and the Argonauts show up to retrieve the Golden Fleece.
Oh, Jason.
And she takes one look at this hunk of burning love and says, I will help you get the Golden Fleece if you take me with you and marry me. And so he agrees.
Sure.
And she does. She is good on her promise. She teaches him and gives him the tools to get through all three of the tasks that he needs to win the fleece. Either by using sleeping drops for the people that he's finding. Yes.
Okay.
But even more magic than Hermione. So she also knows what the test is and is like, and here's how you get past it.
Okay.
And so he takes her with him. They go back to his home and they have several children and they're okay, happy-ish.
Okay.
Except for the fact that he has to go off. He's a demigod and he's got to go off and go on more of these adventures. Right. And
I mean, it's just in my blood.
I gotta go on more quests, babe. And so
I feel like that when I go to the grocery store. Like, that's a quest for me. I'm like, God, do I have to do this today?
So he's got to go on another quest and he finds a prettier dame and marries her instead and is like, yeah, Medea, I'm over you.
No, you can't. You're married.
Hey, no children were cooked and fed to anyone.
I don't think we're at the end of the story yet. Hold on.
So that's the next part.
Oh, my God.
She doesn't feed them to him, but she does kill all of her children.
That's harsh.
And then she's like, deuces, and she leaves.
I mean, did this... So for us, stories of mothers killing their children are...
It's a transgression. Oh, it is the pinnacle of a transgression. Yes.
Okay, so that remains the okay.
Oh yeah,
I didn't know if.
Oh yeah, no. This is that just that makes her like you kind of get like an uggy feeling in your stomach, and it's awful.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Okay, so that was true then. All right, because
yes.
I'm like, maybe this is just like
a thing,
just what the Greeks do. Like,
no.
Some high ideal of
no.
Like...
The whole point of her life is procreation.
Okay.
And she is saying, I
right.
will not for you.
Yeah.
Pro tip, please do not kill your children. Cook them. Put them in
stew. I don't think
this
we necessarily need to tell our listeners that this is a bad thing.
I mean, here's a hot take.
Not instructive.
No.
Well, no, Medea's like a classic villain.
Okay.
she's the classic wicked stepmother.
Well, but Jason's not covering himself in glory in this story either.
No, he's kind of a dick.
Yeah, but okay.
All of the heroes are kind of dicks.
Yeah,
right. And it's but the women are the real villains. And these
yes.
I'm seeing why you're saying patriarchy started here. Yeah. Okay.
So Medea, I believe she borrows her grandfather's carriage. Her grandfather would be Helios, the sun that was spying on Aphrodite.
I just can't keep his nose in at any story. He's everywhere.
Well, he's the sun.
I know him.
So she takes...
God, do you think the earth revolves around you or something, dude? God.
Exactly. So she borrows her dad's carriage and flies off to Athens. So she literally flies. Like, she's, like, such a great witch. She
sure.
kills her children and then flies away. And then she goes to Athens and hooks up with Aegeus. And Aegeus is Theseus's dad.
Okay.
And Aegeus is mourning the loss of his son and all this other stuff. She hooks up with him. She totally becomes Theseus's stepmom at this point. Theseus comes home and she's like, fuck. And so first she tries to kill him. At the last moment, Aegeus...
Well, when you got an M.O., like, yeah.
Well, because he was going to basically make it so she didn't have power, because she's the stepmom of the dying king, or she's the wife of the dying king, and then here comes the heir. And so first she tries to kill him, and she fails. And then she sends him off on a quest to kill the bull, the marathon bull, and he does it because he's Theseus. And... She essentially is just awful to him pretty much the entire time trying to get rid of him. It's like a classic fairy tale of like
sure.
the wicked stepmother.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point is when Theseus decides that he's sick of every year Athens has to send 14 young people, 7 women and 7 men to sacrifice to the Minotaur.
I volunteer myself as tribute. Is that like Yeah. It's Hunger Games?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Theseus is like, this is the last tribute. I'm going to kill Minotaur. This is the end. So Medea's kind of like, whew, got rid of him. So Theseus goes off to Crete and, you know, slays the Minotaur with the help of lovely Ariadne. Now, I just rewrote a story about Ariadne because I love Ariadne so much. She's essentially the mistress of the labyrinth. She is almost an underworld goddess in her own right. And she helps Theseus. And in a lot of the stories, what you'll hear is she was aflame with love for him and helped him because he was pretty. I really think that it was part of her story to move away from Crete. Like, I think she had to go through this process of slaying the Minotaur and leaving for her own growth.
Okay.
She is, it's kind of interesting because the Minotaur's her brother.
What?
Yeah. So her mother, Pasiphae.
Okay.
Is Circe's sister, also a daughter of Helios.
Oh, Jesus.
And Pasiphae, so when King Minos first won over Crete, he did not make proper tributes to the gods. He was supposed to sacrifice a big white bull to Poseidon to thank them. And so in vengeance for not getting proper sacrifices, Poseidon inflamed Pasiphae with lust for the big white bull. So instead of...
Trashy!
Instead of the big white bull mating with the rest of the cows... Pasiphae hired Daedalus to build her a cow outfit for her to crawl into.
Oh, my God.
And be mated with the
trashy. Wow. Wow.
And that is where the Minotaur comes from.
Wow. I mean,
wow.
Upsetting and also wow. Okay. All right.
Our comebacks are normally a little snappier. I think you stunned us on that one.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so sibling of Ariadne.
Yes, so Ariadne and Minotaur are half siblings.
Wow.
Sure.
Because
like you are.
Because the gods be crazy.
I told you this is all soap operas.
Making people do really weird stuff. All right.
Wow.
And like if you're Daedalus, like, yeah, okay, I can make you a cow suit, sure. Like, what are you going to do with this? Do you ask? Like, all right.
It was a wooden contraption.
Mm. As an artisan, but... I don't know where you're going to hang my painting in your home. I just sell you the painting. Right? I don't know where it's going to go.
So,
custom made.
Jesus.
All right.
the other really fun little tidbit about Pasiphae is that her husband, King Minos, was notorious for cheating on her, but she's Circe's sister. She is a sorceress.
Sure.
So she bewitched him that every time he ejaculated with another woman, his penis spewed snakes, scorpions, and spiders.
That is fantastic.
But I mean, you don't get a lot of second dates, I'm guessing.
No,
that's yeah, one and done, I think, is
what. The word on the street's going to get around about that guy, right?
Well, he's like, the king, so it doesn't matter, right?
Even one and done. No thanks, man. I'm good. I've heard, like, Henry VIII got a reputation in Europe. Like, yeah, if I had two heads, I'd be happy to marry you. But no, you're going to, his rep's going to get out.
So which of these two people is the more notorious cheater? The one who is spewing snakes and scorpions or the one who gives birth to a half bull?
That's a really good question.
This is trash. All right.
Welcome to Crete.
Jeez.
So Ariadne helps Theseus to get her. To slay the Minotaur, and he actually sacrifices the Minotaur to Poseidon, which makes Crete all good with the gods. Yay!
Yay!
And then Theseus sails away with Ariadne, but they're like having to scoot out of there really fast, so they forget to change their sails. They come with the tribute ship with black sails. And the father is looking for the sails of the tribute ships to come back. And if there are black sails, that means that Theseus is dead. If there are white sails, it means Theseus is alive. So they're scooting on out of there and they forget to change their sails. So they're flying with the black sails.
Oh, no.
They stop on the way on the tiny island of Naxos, which is just in the middle of the Aegean. You know, they're going from Crete up to Athens. Right. They're having to go through the Cyclades. And they stop on Naxos. And there are about 15 to 20 different variations of what happens next.
Okay.
Most of the variations, or at least half of the variations, Ariadne gets killed.
Oh.
By either Artemis or Dionysus. However, most of the other variations are that Theseus just leaves her there.
What? See ya.
He abandons her on Naxos.
Why?
Well, in some of the variants, Artemis has given him forgetfulness and he forgets her. In some, Artemis tells him to leave her there. And in some, he's just a dick.
Nah. Okay.
So, all depends on which version you're reading.
She's the dog.
That's
is
our dog snoring.
Yeah. So sorry about that. It's,
anyway, she's not superb audio quality, you know, from our productions here at Hemlock Creatives.
So Theseus abandons her on Naxos, and there's a lot of beautiful art out there of Ariadne on the shore, just watching these ships sail away from her and feeling completely devastated and alone and completely, oh, on the shore of Naxos.
So you're saying, so the best case telling of this is that she's on the shore being left. The
yes.
worst case is that she's been killed.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes. Best case is that she's abandoned.
Cool story.
I'm not done yet.
<I'm sure>.
So she's abandoned on the shore. She's devastated. But the cool thing about this is that she has to give up her identity as a helper, her identity as a wife, her identity as a princess, her identity as the sister of the Minotaur, her identity as the mistress of the labyrinth. She has to strip away all of these things and come down into who she really is as a person on this shore. And when she does that, Dionysus himself shows up and marries her.
Aww. Well, that's nice.
And Dionysus, who's like, everybody party, and like the wine and everything else.
Sure.
He's got cross-dressing priests and priests. He's like the queer god.
Yeah.
Like, we have ongoing conversations of if Dionysus could choose their own pronouns, what would they choose? And nobody can agree.
Yeah, no, that's a good question.
Very, very androgynous.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the only Greek god that doesn't cheat on his wife.
Wow. Okay. See, I was waiting
really?
For. I was like, "What's the catch?" Which she is married to. But
well,
okay, that's great.
Because I mean, he's the god of behaving badly. He's
right.
The god of loose.
Yeah.
And never cheats on her.
Strangely nope. ethical.
Maddeningly inconsistent.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's
well. That's
kind,
the
I
nicest
like
story
that, yeah.
that's been on Trashy Divorces so far.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Well, and like a god of permissiveness is, you know, itself, you know, pretty upstanding, I guess, in,
yeah.
in personal conduct.
He's not a Republican.
So, I love reading Sappho poems because often they're just snippets. They're all fragments. We don't have many of her poems in their entirety. And so it's pretty interesting to read the ones that she has. She was a priestess of Aphrodite on the Isle of Lesbos. She was probably pretty high up in the social order. And she was in charge of teaching young women proper social graces.
Ah.
And so much of the interesting thing about Sappho's poetry is that it's the first poet to express interiority instead of just showing, like, and then this happened, and then that happened.
Huh.
She actually has her own voice and her own emotions in the inflection, which is
interesting,
completely new.
Huh.
It,
well, no wonder she pissed everybody off and didn't record her writing.
Well, and they did record a lot of her writing. She was famously brought in to write songs for weddings.
Oh, really?
Quite often.
I'm sorry, so she was the original wedding singer?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes, she was. I really, really love Fragment 74 so much. And it is, I hear that Andromeda, that hayseed, in her hayseed finery, has put a torch to your heart. And she, without even the art of lifting her skirt over her ankles.
Whoa. That's a diss. Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Battle rap there.
That is a battle rap.
Yeah, she was a power poet.
That's fantastic.
This is a good comeback.
Talk to us.
Somebody gets engaged. This is a good one. Yes, it's pretty, but come, dear, need you pride yourself that much on a ring?
Aww. Yowza. Scandalous.
Good writing is timeless.
It's true.
Go to back to BC and find amazing disses and trash. Oh, this is my favorite one. This is my absolute favorite one. If you're squeamish, don't prod the beach rubble.
The beach rubble. Oh. That's bad. Okay. Sappho, I love it.
Yeah, Sappho's got some snappy stuff.
So she was the original wedding singer, the wedding writer.
Yes.
Okay, you got a few more trashy stories for us, though.
I do. It's hard because so many of the trashy stories are also very sad. But you asked me earlier what my favorite.
What is your favorite
is right now? Right now, I would say, and probably for the last 5 years, the Persephone myth has been one of my absolute favorites.
So remind us all of Persephone.
So Demeter is Persephone's mom. Mm-hmm. And Demeter is the goddess of the harvest and of the bounty and right. of the things that come out of the earth that feed human beings. And so she's this goddess of the grain. And she's also essentially the archetypal mother. And you can't have a mother figure without a child.
Sure.
Like, there's a kind of necessary piece
there.
Well,
until you eat them. No, I'm kidding.
So Persephone is the necessary part of Demeter that is her daughter. Persephone, as Demeter's daughter, is the goddess of new shoots in springtime. She's the little crocus noses that you're seeing right now, or the little daffodils mm-hmm. that are coming up. She's the buds on the trees. Like, that's Persephone energy. She was beautiful. The only goddess she was not more beautiful than was Aphrodite herself.
Okay.
She was gorgeous.
That's pretty high claim.
And most of the single gods put in a bid for her love, like to marry her.
Sure.
Apollo, Hermes, Hephaestus, like they were all like, ooh, yeah, I want me some of that. She was very young.
Did she get any cow suits as presents? And
she did not get any cow suits. There's also, depending on what telling is her paternity is of question. Some say Poseidon, some say Zeus, some say it's, you know, Parthenogenesis, and Demeter just popped her out without any god at all.
Okay.
Like, it just kind of, there's a lot of different, say, like, tales, but mostly Zeus is her dad-ish.
Okay.
But she is picking flowers with the big-breasted Nereids. Like, literally, that's how they're described in the Homeric hymns, as deep-breasted Nereids. They're essentially these big-boobed nymphs from the ocean.
Fantastic.
And
definitely who you want to hang out with.
Well, and I think that the reason why that's an important detail is because it shows how old she is.
Mm-hmm.
She's a teenager. She's hanging out with teenagers. You know, she's not a child anymore.
Right.
This is not pedophilia. This is an old enough young woman
sure.
who, you know, is probably of age. Because you don't really get an idea of that from a Homeric hymn. So she's picking flowers and she finds a narcissus on the ground, and Gaia herself bewitches this narcissus. She pulls the narcissus from the ground, and as she pulls, it opens up this giant chasm in the ground.
Why does Gaia do that?
To set things into motion. Gaia is always one for creation, and if creation is resisting creation, Gaia will make it happen.
Oh.
Gaia will force your hand.
That's fantastic.
So you could make that claim about climate change, that Gaia's saying, here's what you got to do.
Right.
Because
it's the universe coming to give you the signal over and over and over again until it's a brick wall in your face and you can't avoid the signal any longer.
It's the proverbial Mack truck moment.
Got it.
So Persephone wanted to live in her, and at this point in her story, she's only called girl or maiden. Her name is Kore. Kore literally just means girl.
Okay.
She's just a chick at this point. She doesn't even have a name because Persephone means she who swallows the light. And she doesn't get that until she becomes queen of the underworld.
Ah.
So she plucks the narcissus, opens this chasm, and uprides Hades, with his black horses and his chariot.
Sure.
And he comes up and snatches her. Now, in all of the retellings, if you look at the Greek, the ancient Greek word for what Hades did to Persephone, it is always taken or kidnapped or snatches.
Mm-hmm.
It is not raped.
Although this story is famously known as the Rape of Persephone, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah. Huh.
But I think that this... So I think that the retelling of it as a rape is perpetuating rape culture. Because, well, it's okay in so many of these stories. Like Apollo rapes Daphne. And like there's so many rape stories in these stories that it's like that same perpetuation. And one of the things that I really love about the fact that when you look at the ancient Greek itself... is that Hades just took her. And in a lot of the context, the word that was used in social context among people, it would have meant eloping.
Oh.
It could have meant that she just spent the night at his house and was therefore sullied, and then they had to get married. Like, socially speaking, there could have been a hell of a lot of consent.
It's the baby I'm cold outside. Of Greek mythology.
So we've stripped the consent out of it, where there is consent in inherent in the story, which I find really telling about us.
Mm-hmm.
I think how we tell the story is very different from what the story is actually saying. Takes her to the underworld. And now this is actually the point at which my brain started kicking in about Persephone, because she lives there for 6 months. She has to live there for 6 months because how long does it take for everybody to start starving when Demeter says, nope, no food for nobody until you find my daughter?
Right.
So literally the gods don't do anything until they're not getting their offerings in their temples.
Oh.
So it has to be a serious amount of time that Persephone is in the underworld. And her mom's going, where is she? And her mom, like, dresses up as an old woman. And there's, like, this whole other part of this story about the mother having to mourn the death of the daughter at her marriage. Because the daughter is no longer her little girl.
Oh.
She's now a wife and a woman in her own right. And she has to let her go in
that way.
Maybe
you should give her a name now. God.
And so, but it's a rite of kind of going from being a mother into being a crone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a maturation story for Demeter. It's also a maturation story for Persephone. So it's interesting from like that women's perspective. And all of the rites at Eleusis are about life and death and being okay with the cycle of death, but it's also about being okay with the cycle of your own life and aging.
Interesting.
So Demeter's doing her thing. She starves everybody. Zeus is like, dude, can I get some offerings? And she's like, find my daughter. You know who saw Hades took Persephone?
Let me guess. Helios.
Yes.
Fuck, that guy is so nosy.
Why didn't they just start with Helios, you see everything.
Yeah, he's the Encyclopedia Brown of Greek mythology. Like months, go ask him
I know,
first.
Months later, they're like, oh, we should totally talk to Helios. Brain fart. Okay.
Yeah, so they talk to Helios. Helios says, yeah, saw Hades take her.
Sure, Gaia opened a hole
like
in the world.
Like 6 months ago, I've been waiting for somebody to ask me about this for a long time.
Right, exactly. God. So, oh, he's a hard guy to catch. You gotta, like, drive up to the sun. So, it's hot.
Sure,
it's not like he keeps regular hours. I'm kidding. Sorry. Just a bad fun day.
So they find out where he is, and he sends Zeus. In some stories, Zeus himself goes down. In some stories, he sends Hermes. It doesn't really matter. He sends for Persephone. So Persephone has been in the underworld with Hades for 6 months. Sister knows not to eat anything. She knows the rules, that if she eats anything, the fates have declared she has to stay in the underworld. She has been starving herself for 6 months.
Girl's hungry.
At the very, very end of her tenure there, the story, if you listen to, like, you know, the going tale that is in what you read in high school, the story is that Hades tricks her into eating 6 pomegranate seeds. He didn't trick her for the last 6 months, and yet he tricks her right
and
before
now,
she leaves.
Sure.
And that's an anorexic snack. I'm sorry. But if I have starved myself for six months,
I'm not breaking down for a pomegranate seed.
For exactly,
give me some queso. Give me a Twinkie. Like, yeah, give me something good.
Right,
pomegranate seed,
and just 6 of them.
Mm-mm.
So for me, the rereading of this story, I was like, she chose that. She made that decision. There was no tricking. She chose exactly what she was going to eat. To exactly make what she wanted. She chose what she wanted. She defined her terms.
Okay, so talk to me. Her terms were 6 pomegranate seeds.
So she has to spend 6 months of the year in the underworld and 6 months of the year above ground.
6 months is as long as I can go without eating. So.
No, she can eat now.
In the underworld.
In the underworld, because okay. She becomes the goddess of the underworld. She marries Hades. She then becomes the goddess of death. She is the goddess of the underworld. She is the queen. So she chooses
to do that,
become a queen instead of just a chick of new shoots.
I mean, it's not the worst trade-off.
So the goddess of death is the daughter of the goddess of motherhood?
Yes.
Fascinating. That's got some nice circularity to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and the other thing is there's a whole Tumblr thing riff about, like, Hades also doesn't cheat. He is also got a steady job, and he's got a dog that he loves. And it's like, who's going to say he's rich?
Yeah.
Like, who's going to say no to that?
Like, Sirius is his dog, right?
No. Cerberus.
Cerberus. I was so close. So close. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Like, who's going to say no to that?
You're Persephone now.
Yeah.
You can be queen.
Be queen.
Fuck yeah.
Right.
Done.
So she goes back up home, and as she walks, flowers bloom across the ground, and she goes and finds her mother, and her mother is beautiful again. And then, because it is no longer eternal summer, because she is now the bringer of the seasons, when she's in the underworld, it's winter, and when she's above world, it's spring and summer. Now, the humans have to learn how to plan for that. And to, you know, plant during the spring and harvest in the fall and then stock away for the winter so they can survive while Persephone is below ground. And so the very next thing that happens after she gets above ground is she and Demeter go teach Triptolemus how to perform agriculture.
Oh, wow.
And they actually teach everybody how to do that.
How to plant, reap, sow.
Yeah. The interesting thing about the Persephone myth is that no other story about her after that first one shows her above ground with her mother.
Really?
It is always down in the underworld. All of her epithets are in the underworld. All of her activities that where she shows up again is on her throne.
Huh.
So I don't know how often she visits mom.
Probably not very often. Well, mom couldn't even give her a name.
Yeah, girl.
I mean, that was true in Bird Box too, though, so.
Oh, God. I can't. I love it that our neighbor has picked now.
Yes,
I'm blowing.
I can absolutely hear the yard work happening.
Sorry, this is the Perils of Saturday recording, which we're learning about.
Yeah. So we still haven't figured out our pithy catchphrase to close things out. Well, that's, we're walking through a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know, like keep it trashy.
We can.
I'm a fan of keep it trashy, but.
Go forth, be trashy. Stay single is what I say, because that's about after doing this episode. Ha ha. Okay, great. Hey, Alicia, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah,
by.
Thank you so much.
You are a this wealth has been really fun. Of mythological knowledge. This was fascinating.
And who knew? Well, you did, but who knew how trashy our predecessors were? Just trash piles.
Since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
I think it just tells you what it means to be human.
I mean, that's, yeah. Love and war.
Love and war.
Divorce.
Walking garbage.
Breakups. Yeah, Zeus gets 5 trash cans. Phoshes. Tarius.
Tarius.
Yeah. Tarius, yeah. He's a big fiver.
Yeah.
I'm neither a fan of Theseus or Jason, but, you know.
No, I think Dionysus wins the day, which is Dionysus coming in hot. Yeah.
And Hades.
And Hades.
Dog lover.
The two guys with the worst reputations, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
Like, the irony. The irony of the Greeks. That's really, I mean, that's, thank you. Today has been remarkably informative. I remembered so much about my Edith Hamilton mythology that I hadn't been reminded of before. That was fascinating. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, it's been super fun.
That was awesome.
We've lost control of the process.
Okay. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. Happy Valentine's Day. Go love your, Jesus Christ.
Enjoy your yard work.
Yeah. Enjoy your Saturday yard work. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers.
Jesus Christ. What a mess.
Trashy Divorces is brought to you by Hemlock Creatives.
Our music is by the extra super fabulous Ratsy. Check out her store at Ratsy's Store on Instagram. Our art is by the amazing Sydney Smith. Visit her portfolio at sydneyvsmith.carbonmade.com.
Learn more at trashydivorces.com. Join our Trashy Divorces Facebook group and follow us at Trashy Divorces on Twitter, Instagram, and we have a YouTube.
And if you're enjoying the pod, tell a friend. It really helps us, and let's face it, your friends will like you better for it.
Almost certainly.
No, they may like you worse, but
they almost certainly will like you better.
It's trash candy. It's so much fun.